So it's time for Without a Net, where I pull out a prompt and with not having seen it before, and then I respond to it in a way, find out what this prompt has to do with the collapse of civilization or the murder of the planet. Here they are. First prompt. The fate of Easter Island. The fate of Easter Island. Well, what we know is that Easter Island at one point was covered with trees. And what we know is that is no longer the case. And it is a case study of overshoot and what happens when people do not take responsibility for the land where they live and do not treat it well, but instead diminish its capacity to support life. And there are evidently a lot of scientific and archaeological and anthropological fights going on right now as to exactly how and why the capacity of Easter Island to support life has decreased. But what we know is that it did. And it has been used, as a case study of how, as a society starts to fall apart, what they did to make themselves grow is what they do as it starts to fall apart. So, for example, at Easter Island, one of the things that they perceived as making their culture work was the construction of large stone heads. And as their way of life starts to collapse, well, if making large stone heads was what made us great and we're starting to collapse, we need to make more large stone heads. And we can see the same thing with, you know, as the Aztecs were facing the Spanish, you know, what one of the things that had made the universe hold together was human sacrifice. So as things are falling apart, well, we just need to do more and more. And of course, this is what we see with the whole bright green movement and with capitalism in general, that what made capitalism grow was the mass consumption of resources and the construction of new items and technological escalation. And so as things are falling apart, as the economy collapses, well, what we need to do is just make more things. And we need to have more technological escalation. And that is a recipe for collapse. Next one. GMO mindset. GMO mindset. I guess this is why they call it Without a Net, because I don't really know what to say. We have come to accept, you know, one of the things I find really fascinating and horrifying is that there was at one point a discussion over whether genetically modified organisms are going to be harmful. And there was a robust discussion happening around this. And then suddenly the discussion disappeared and we were drinking GMOs in our milk or eating them in our tomatoes. And somehow this happens every time that there is a robust discussion about whether nuclear power should happen or whether GMOs should happen or whether cloning should happen with various species. And then there's a robust discussion, but it doesn't really matter because capital pushes it forward. And then suddenly the discussion is whether it should be labeled. And it doesn't really matter. There is this one of the fatal flaws of this culture is an almost blanket acceptance of new technologies that because it can be done, it should be done. And I know that among, for example, the Okanagan Indians of what is now British Columbia, one of their decision-making processes for social decisions was to break people into groups of, there were like, they called them mothers, fathers, youth and elders. And the youth would be more creative and more exciting. It's like they get excited about ideas and they want to do things. And the fathers would be more action oriented. The mothers would be more interested in how this will affect all the relationships in the community. And the elders are mainly concerned with tradition. And each of these constituencies would raise their concerns about some new technology, for example. And they may reject a new technology because it will harm their traditions or because it will harm their relationships. And we don't have those discussions in this culture. We will start to have those discussions. How will GMOs affect our society? How will GMOs affect the world? But the truth is, the discussions are irrelevant because it is technological escalation, which is what I call technological progress, because it's really the escalation of the ability to control. Technological escalation and commerce, uber alles. And the last one. Identity theft. Identity theft. You know, so often we will hear that someone, oh, this is a different kitty, by the way. This is black kitty as opposed to gray kitty. Anyway, so often we will hear that someone's going to steal our identity, and that's what's really meant by that is someone is going to use your name and social security number to steal money or something. But there's a much larger identity theft that is being taken place, that's been taking place for a long time. One is that the primary identity theft that has taken place is that we have forgotten that we are human animals who need habitat and who need clean air and clean water and who without these we die. And we have been taught that, you know, I was watching a basketball game the other day and there was some ad came on for how you can be anything, and it was supposed to be all inspiring. You can be anything. You can be anything in the world. And another ad came on right after that said, we in this generation have more power than anyone in any generation has ever had before. And I found those both horrifying and untrue. And the truth is that you can't be anything you want. You cannot be an ocelot. You can't be an elephant. And at this point, you can't even be a human being. You can't be a human being in relationship to, I mean, I have said for years that, you know, one of the things I wrote about in my zoo book is that one of the things that zoos teach us is that you can take a wolverine out of its habitat and put it in a little cage and still call it a wolverine. I went to the zoo and I saw a wolverine. No, you didn't. What you saw was wolverine meat and wolverine guts packed in a wolverine fur suit. But a wolverine is the land that it lives on, and it is the smell of the pine forest, and it is the smell of the the food that it's going to eat. And we, one of the things zoos teach us is that you can have a gazelle right here, and then right here you have a lion, and you just have to walk 5 steps in between, and there's a concrete cage or concrete wall in between them. But that's not how it works. That's not what they really are. What they really are is all the interactions between them and their habitat. And a much bigger identity theft than somebody simply stealing my social security number, as annoying as that might be, is that we have been robbed of our birthright as living beings to know what it's like to live in community of human and non-humans other in long-term, interspecific cooperation. And I will never know what it is like to watch a flock of birds so large that it darkens the sky for days at a time. And I will never know what it's like to stand by a river that is so full of salmon that you can't see the bottom, and that you can see fins all the way across the river. And I will never know what it's like to live in a world. I walk through a forest every night, and every single night I think about accounts I've read of people 200 years ago in these forests who could not sleep because it was so loud, because there were so many animals. Last night I heard a possum. And that's nice, but I heard one possum. And 3 nights ago, I heard coyotes. And 4 or 5 nights ago, I heard an owl. And that's not what it's supposed to be like. And we have lost our identity as beings living. We have lost our identity as beings living in communities that are not being killed.